Let's get going. Hey, welcome everybody. This is BNP Weekly episode 75. It is 16th of March 2020. I can't actually pronounce it that properly.
2020.
2020. Thank you. Thank you, Waldeck. Thank you for helping me with that. Any other hints on the English pronunciation? No. So my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a principal program manager in the OneDrive SharePoint platform team, and the co-host is Waldeck. Who are you? Quick intro.
Hi, everybody. My name is Valdemar Stegas. I am head of product at Rancor, and today we have wonderful guest Tracy. Welcome.
Waldeck. Hello. Hello.
Can you do a quick intro? Who you are? Where you're coming from? And what do you do?
So just to make everyone jealous, so from beautiful sunny South Africa, it's a warm, I think it's like 30 degrees Celsius today or something. I'm going to swim immediately after this. So so Tracy, Microsoft Office 365 service and services MVP as well, and passionate about people, helping people, empowering, crazy blogger, challenger, motorbike rider. That's it.
And you've been recently, you've been doing quite a lot of keynotes as well, kind of a motivation keynote. So what kind of keynotes those have been? So
I've done a couple. And what's nice, though, is that, and I mean, we all know how this has evolved, how conferences used to be a lot more technical. And even though I can get very technical and I give them options when it comes to keynotes or even sessions, people will suddenly ask me to talk about the change management and adoption stuff. Even, yeah. I mean, I was at SharePoint Saturday in Bangalore a while back, and I physically had every person in the room was a developer. So I was like, this is going to be a problem. But it's I think it's stuff that needs to be said, and people need to hear it, because we just haven't spoken about a lot of that type of stuff for so many years. So yeah.
And it's the classic challenge with even with Microsoft, and we do take blame on that one, because we tend to share people or divide people by being a developer or as an IT pro, which is completely insane. It's just because maturity of people do not fall in these categories. So
well, I mean, yes and no, right? So if I look back at myself, there was time when all I wanted to do is to write code. I didn't want to hear about anything else. Like, I was really oblivious to anything else. Call it adoption, call it deployment, like going to product, boring. With age, like, my horizon would expand, and I was like, hey, there is more to world than trying to type the whole day on keyboard and to write code, right? And then basically with that, like, you open your eyes, you think about, hey, so once that piece of code that I wrote is done, what's next? And they're like, well, then we deploy it to prod. How do you do that? And then, like, the whole world opens around you, then, okay, so then it's in prod. Then what? Well, people need to use it. Like,
how do they use it? Exactly. Right? There are people.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's meant for someone to be used. And then suddenly with that, like, you start to really get interested into this other area of work on our market. And then suddenly it looks like, yes, like, basically the code is actually the last, like, well, for me, for a long time, it was the first thing, the first step. Like, we have something to solve, so we build it, and then we do it. No. The first thing is to really understand, like, what is the problem you want to solve? And only then, like really the last step is to get, okay, now that we know what problem it is, how we want to solve it, for whom, and so forth and so on, now we build it or not, because maybe there's something available out of the box. Right, Tracy?
Yeah, I think, and it's exactly what you said, like, not even just the difference between developer and IT pro or the way we categorize, is that the product that we all know and love, a very great big component of it is, let's call it citizen bakers. So I can't cook at all, okay? I mean, I use my oven to put the rest of my stuff in where I don't have space in my kitchen. I mean, the first thing I switch off when I buy a house or move into a house is I switch off the oven, because it's just a total waste, okay?
I'd much rather basically have a cabinet. Additional cabinet.
You pack wine in there, okay? That's what it is. And but imagine this, that these days I can go out and I can buy a box that says add 2 eggs and water and shake it, and you've got a chocolate cake. But that doesn't make me less of a baker. It doesn't make the cake less tasty. But we still do that. We still say that if someone doesn't understand the ingredients from start and they don't know how the whole process works, they're not a developer or a citizen developer. And the products that we using now is empowering people to be that, to not be a traditional developer anymore, but be able to create amazing things. So that's still a big thing that needs to change in the industry. I still see a lot of resistance on that.
Yeah, actually, related on that one, can I have a look on your recent blogging stream, which has been interesting on the Power Platform? Can you talk about slightly on that one? Why, what is that all about? Because that relates on empowering normal people.
It does.
Normal people. Ba-doom. Oh,
we are not normal people. No, sorry.
This is a show for SP, not normal people weekly.
You're going to get the shock treatment from me. Are you ready for this? That's what you get for doing.
For occasions like that, you have a specific appliance just by the reach of your hand. Like, you can just...
I have two of them for situations like this. But one might be mad. Another one that speaks to developers.
Ready.
So here's another normal person that can tell you about technology. I'm busy with another month blog challenge thing. And a quick thing for those who might not know me, I did it a couple of years ago where... I started with wine because no good story starts with a green salad, by the way. So I was drinking wine in my garden and I had this crazy idea to blog my journey of learning how to use Office 365. Okay, so I started this challenge and I did it every day for a year and said I would never blog again in my life. And two months later, Microsoft launched Microsoft 365. And I was like, really?
Another year.
So I did it again, but it was the most incredible thing I've ever done so for myself. And I mean, if that can inspire anyone, is to don't wait until you think you're an expert to do things. None of us are experts anymore, by the way. Even us normal people.
normal people, no, this not is normal people, me, nobody no. is expert.
but there's no such thing anymore. If you had to wait until you were an expert to share your learning journey, you would never have anything to say.
Yeah.
And if you think other people can't learn from how you learn, then you make a big mistake. So that two crazy challenges I did was the most incredible thing I could ever have done for myself, is what I learned, to force myself to learn every day. And that's exactly what I'm doing with this current challenge. It's not that long, but the challenge, a month of March Madness. So it's a 31-day blog challenge, and it's about the Power Platform. And I'm touching on areas that's very far outside of my comfort zone. Even though I come from an InfoPath and SharePoint designer background, you can't say that you're just going to fall into Power Apps. You know, it's not that easy. Okay, so I've been a little bit nervous about Power Apps and even Power BI, because it was so far outside of my comfort zone. It's really taking me time. And if you don't invest that time, you can't learn it. You can't learn by just reading a blog every now and then that someone's, if you don't try things and you don't document it, then you're not going to remember these things. So this month is more my journey into just refreshing my memory on a lot of stuff and then learning new things and staying up to date and learning some of the basics. I'm not going to cover a lot in a month. I mean, those products are too deep, but I'm covering each of them, licensing basics, support basics, a couple of quick wins. You know, I did Power Automate now, so I think I did it for about 10 days, where I shared cool examples of things people can build. So I'm doing it with video as well to help people. And I think something that is one of my superpowers, I suppose, and it's because I'm a normal person, is that I learned the ability to speak tech and layman's terms. I've always fit in between the two of them. So it's very easy for me to speak very tech or geek or very end user focused. And I know that I add value by breaking things down into simpler terms for people that aren't technical to get started with it, because it can be very overwhelming and it's scary, you know?
Yep.
Someone Absolutely. Might just have captured invoices and done finances for years and now suddenly they have this license and they want to enable themselves, but they're frightened, you know, and it is scary if you're not technical. So yeah, that's what that's all about.
But I guess so that is actually an interesting part, right? Because these people are experts in their processes. They know them inside out, right? I mean, if they were to explain to us, not normal people, like how these processes work and what are the business rules, and basically I bet they have somewhere an Excel sheet with really formulas that you can like, wow, I need a book on that.
Yeah,
it's the other way around too, right? Like I think these people are better off trying to learn technology to solve their problems themselves, as opposed to try to explain to us all the business rules with all the caveats and all the different things that we would need to take into account to build things for them, because that wouldn't work in the end.
It's the best fast track ever, because I've gotten into trouble for saying things like that, but it's easier to teach a business person a tech skill than it is to teach a techie a business process. It's just like that.
That is true. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a passion that comes with understanding the output and understanding the problem that you want to fix. And you can't pay people to have that. There's a passion
also,
that comes with understanding frustrations.
But I guess it's also the way I see it is that I experienced that from the other side, right? So if I were to explain to somebody non-technical, like how do you do things with code, like you will quickly go through the basics. But then you will get to edge cases, and you will have edge case for everything. And to explain that to a person who isn't really developer at heart, it will border impossible. Yeah. And it will be the same thing for them. They know their business, and they know every single edge case. And explaining that to us, it's exactly as you say. If you don't think that way, if that business is not in your heart, you will, at some point you will just give up, saying like, I don't get it. It's too hard. Like, you need to simplify the pros. Like, no. This is how our company operates, right?
Yeah. But that's why it's super, super important to have the let's say, generalists in the middle, also translating the business
normal
and
people,
IT
basically.
Language.
So, like, not normal, but little bit normal, but also not normal.
Kind of like T-Rex, right?
That's the personality, like multiple personality types, like me.
Yeah. We need these kind of people.
Hey, listen, these days it's not frowned upon to be crazy anymore. It's a requirement, okay? It's at work.
But now coming back on the Power Platform, and if you think about, for example, SharePoint and Microsoft 365 in general, what's Tracy, your kind of a thinking on the direction? Is it a good way of approaching for Microsoft that we're trying to empower the people by Power Platform and by Power Apps and everything else? Or what is then the value of pro developers? Or is this away from them? Or is this not really centrally properly done? How would the customer then start thinking on when do I use which approach?
So I do think that's a good question. And it's kind of thinking about crowdsourcing. So imagine you can, instead of having 10 people that can help you fix something, you suddenly have 1,000 that can help you fix something. And I mean, that's what this has done for me. I've always said that Microsoft adds the extra to ordinary and makes us extraordinary. I mean, that's just the whole thing, is that before, and I know that the 80-20 rule doesn't apply because IT was never 20% of the company, it was much less. So let's say it was 1%, the IT pros, and 99% was end user business focused. And I don't think that's going to change at all, but I think they can actually focus now on the more complex stuff, where the more everyday quick wins, the business can start solving for themselves, and they can add so much more value, because now 99% of the company can also add value, and it's not about what level they add it on. And I think that's something I see in the industry a lot, is that people will look at the products and say, but it can't do this, you know, it can't create this, and my onboarding solution, whatever, and I'm like, don't ever deny the fact that it's 1,000 times the 5-minute savers that saves money.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that big thing. Everything doesn't have to be that big thing. And now, for me, the IT pros can now concentrate on those big things that takes months sometimes to build. But business can do those quick fixes that maybe only saves 5 minutes, but it saves 5 minutes for 10,000 people. And that's where the value comes in for me.
Makes perfect sense. I think that's also the if you think about the idea as an interest, that the idea interest is evolving as well, because we no longer have those, especially in this area of business. There is no longer like multi-million dollar projects anymore. It's all about constant flow and evolution, and then exactly. empowering the end user to adjust here and there by themselves, exactly. rather than paying for those for the external consultants. Yeah. It's much more cost efficient. Absolutely.
I think just a quick note on that, and I've always called it iterative change. Maybe that's the right approach or not, but so I've always done rapid prototyping for customers. I mean, I'll sit in sessions and someone will be taking notes and I can build that thing in SharePoint faster than they can write down what they think someone wants. And for yep. me, there's always been great value in that, because I also believe that, I mean, we know this, all of us, is that we've been on projects for 6 months or a year, that by the time we get to the first draft of something, the process has changed, the company yep. has changed, you know, or yep. or we spend 6 months just to get business and IT to speak the same language, because I call it an Excel spreadsheet and you call it a calendar and you're calling it a CSV or something. So that's always been painful. And I mean, I always say that if you start with simple process as well, don't over engineer everything. You don't have to, everything doesn't have to be a Ferrari. I would rather have small little step ups every single yep. day, because then the system becomes the requirements gathering for the end user, if you think of it. So if they keep on giving feedback and you make changes every 3 months, that's much better than documenting changes. The system yep. actually becomes your documentation. I mean, there's so much value for that. And I think people don't understand agile technology yet. They're still too stuck in their ways with waterfall ways of doing things. You know, that whole build, document, test, deploy, test again. Yep. If things can't work like that anymore, it takes too long to turn around.
Yep.
But I think it's also an interesting point, right? Because I can imagine that if solution is being initiated by a person who owns the process, like they realize they don't see that they need to solve the need for everybody at once, right? So yeah. they will just scratch their own itch, right? They will fix their own, like they might even say, you know what? Sure. 1 out of 10 times there is this exception. If this comes, I will do that manually. But yes. for the 9 out of 10s, I will have an Excel sheet or Access database or whatever I have, right? Basically to, as you say, like it's the 5 minutes that I can scrap off every single task.
That's exactly right?
And then yeah. as opposed to like, okay, so you want to have official project through the CIO, CTO, well, that will affect everybody and then it's going to be big and it has to address every single issue because it's company-wide. And yep. this is where problem starts, right? Because like yep. you will have to have specs and sign off and approval and budget company wide. Whereas yeah. here you can make a big improvement starting really small.
Just to add something quick on that though, something that I'm very passionate about as well is doing things right even then when you're doing things small.
Absolutely.
So the type of articles I write is always focused at what I call citizen developers. Okay. And I teach them project management, process, documentation, determining ROI, even when they do the small things, because those small things become very big things and they become oh, yeah. multi-million dollar solving processes. And if yeah. we don't, and I know the industry considers that as soft skills, and it's such a stupid name for it. I don't consider it as soft skills. But those type of skills like project management and asking the right questions and documenting things, we should instill in every day in any user who starts using the technologies to improve things for themselves, because then yep. you build that that foundation is then better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And coming back on just a kind of a historical example, just thought about thinking about the failures on the larger projects and everything. And I've done obviously plenty of customer cases when I was still a consultant. But as an example, just close to my heart, because I remember this and was still kind of struggling with this in SharePoint. In SharePoint 2013, we released the search-driven internet sites.
Yes. Right?
Search-driven, yes. actually, it's intranet sites as well. You could use the same technology as an intranet site. It was something which was designed roughly in 2011, and it was designed to solve the performance problems with the hierarchical navigation, because yeah. whenever you created a new, if you have had a massively big site collection and created a new node, it flashed the cache and everything, and performance was horrible. But whenever we released the search-driven internet or internet sites, nobody actually created them, because everybody was already so used to the model what we had. Well, you might have actually. Few exceptions. Good. We found one. But there was few exceptions, obviously, on that. But but majority of people felt that, hey, this is completely new way, a wrong way, and I can't adjust my existing investments to this model. And then basically we as a Microsoft, we invested a lot of millions and millions of money on creating that capability, which we then basically threw away. Well, technically it might still work. I don't know. It doesn't work in SharePoint Online.
It doesn't. Well, yeah.
Okay.
But there was one big thing that I, like, thinking about the time when I used it to build internet sites, there was one thing that people struggled with, and that was, okay, so if I create a page here in catalog, how will it look live?
Yeah.
Because that was the whole idea that you create, like you have a repository of content, you create something in there, and you can publish it whatever you want.
Yeah.
How will it look like?
Yeah, exactly.
And that inability to preview the page, how it will show in production when live, That made it really hard for normal people who used to edit content, right? Just content editor, comms, mark.
No.
You're welcome. Right. So that was like one of the things that I experienced firsthand that at time was like, well, I mean, there are ways to see it. Right. But in retrospect, it was a valid question. It was like it made perfect sense for these people to ask them to ask, but how would it look like?
But again, that's a really awesome example of the waterfall way of doing development.
Exactly.
So there's somebody had a strong opinion. Somebody was a strong person who drove that decision. And we basically invested on that one, even though we were not sure if it's going to run or not, which is fair. That's a risk what you can take. But still, it didn't run. And it wasn't useful, and people didn't like it because it was a massively new way of doing things rather than evolving and testing and getting feedback.
I think the thing on that we have to be aware of as well, and I mean, that's another thing that I'm quite a big, like, I don't know, a protest for, but is that I have a lot of empathy with why people do things the way they did them, okay? So as much as I'd love to convince everyone that this is the new way of working and it is better, I do a lot of research into understanding why people did things the way they did. And navigating in SharePoint is a specific example, building subsites, the hierarchical, the waterfall approach, like you kind of said it now. But even going straight back to the user's desktops, the fact that they still have gazillions of folders that they navigate through, the fact that we still load their laptops for them and put all their shortcuts back on the machines means that the world's not ready for search yet. So even though we used to do things that way in the past because search was not that great, but now it's changed, but we're still doing it. We're still navigating to content because we're still not trusting our own ability and tech ability to search and to find what we're looking for. And
because change is hard, right?
Yeah. It's that culture that you need to change. I mean, because it comes from somewhere. You know, it's a reason.
But again, the change is hard for anybody as a person. Every single time somebody introduces you with the change, that is always hard. You feel terrified or slightly afraid. And right now, the current situation in the world is a lot of unknowns. And people are basically then fighting against that. Or some people are having fun on, hey, I've been working 6 years in remotely in my home. What is so hard with that? Well, because people are not used
for
to that.
For you, it isn't. For some, it is.
So the empathy which we have to show openly is super important as well, because then people understand that other people are struggling as well.
And the interesting thing about change is that oftentimes the not normal people try to drive the change through tech, right? So, hey, you work at home. You work at home. Here is Teams. And I was like, yeah, but Teams is just a middle to it. Like, it's a mean to an end. It's something that's supposed to support you, but the change doesn't start with tech.
Yeah.
Tech is an addition, but in order to facilitate change, like, there are some other things that you have to go through first.
Yeah.
Right? And it's no matter if it's the way you store your files, the way you find what are you going to do today, the way you communicate or not. No matter what tools you put, like tools will only emphasize what you do or do not do.
Yeah. True. Sure.
But if you really want to change something, then then tool is definitely not the first aid.
Tool should be seen as an enabler, not as the means to the end. It's not really the main concentration area. It's not what are you doing as a tool. So
tools can help you be more efficient, but they definitely do not enable change.
I always say that products doesn't fix problems. People fixes problems with products.
Yeah.
Products often cause problems.
That's true.
Some problems. Products cause some problems.
Not normal people like you two.
Yes. Not normal people who build products.
Now let's jump for an article. Articles for a while. We'll talk about other things as part of the articles, and then we'll come back and close the call. And just double checking this because we're so super organized. Do you have a hard stop on the 1:30? Either one. If we go a few minutes long, not a massive deal. Okay, excellent. This is how well we organize our discussions. So we didn't actually ask this
before.
We are very
well organized.
It's all scripted. Yes. I'm just reading the script, right?
Yes.
So, Tracy, your turn to say no.
No.
Okay, so let me share my screen and let's have a look on things. So, few articles from Microsoft. We're going to spend actually quite a lot of time on crisis management and do an understandable reasons. Well, for those who haven't, not aware yet, you'll see it in a second. But few news things, at least in the Microsoft 365 developer side of the house, the Office UI Fabric or UI Fabric, which the Office was already gone, I think, for it, is now evolving into the Fluent UI. This is basically an end result of long, long, long internal discussions on what do we do with Office UI Fabric, and then what was it the teams had?
Stardust,
and then all of these things are now getting evolved and merged, and then basically it's going to be called Fluent UI, which is the name of the modern UX in Windows 10, something like that, or the Microsoft Fluent UI, something like that, right? Am I saying this correctly?
Okay. In a way.
Okay.
Windows 10 design language, that was something else, because I think that was more common with the Xbox.
Oh, fair point.
That was a different thing. I forgot the name.
Fluent UI is anyway where we're heading as an experience, and we try to be consistent as a Microsoft across all of the services, and that's what the UI Fabric evolves to Fluent UI, and basically these are controls which are enabling the capabilities to be consistent, which is interesting. Now, let's actually spend slightly more time on this one then. So this one is really cool from Mark Cashman. Came out on Sunday a week ago, and basically building a crisis management site to connect people and information. And this is really Mark explaining, I think during weekend he had his like, hey, what if we would do and blah, 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 and then basically designing sessions. And I know that Microsoft IT actually worked with Mark on some of the designs and experiences as well. And so how you can easily and efficiently build a cool looking site. Now, people were a lot of excited on this one. And then when I noticed this, we started internally then discussion on, hey, wait a minute. So why wouldn't we actually make the whole thing as an automated thing so that we can actually include it in the Microsoft lookbook? So we include it here in the organizational site, the crisis management, crisis communication, actually. And the crisis communication site, not a rare thing that I wouldn't get confused. But anyway, crisis communication site never happens. And the whole point of this one is that basically this is what you get. So if you're an administrator, and we do know that it's stupid that you need to be a tenant administrator because it requires super high permissions to get to be able to execute the solution. But basically, if you are, or if you can ask your tenant administrator to do this, you'll grant the permissions for the application. And then the application is asking on your URL, which URL you actually want to use. So as an example, we can do crisis management 4384, and it's going to check the URL. It's going to tell you if there's an already a site, and then click
a provision. Taken.
No, it's not. Okay. Click provision, and then the end result will be looking like this. So you basically have an example site with the example navigation structures and all of that. And we have some example content also pointing out that there could be a Yammer feed here and all of that. So Tracy, you tested this. You gave us immediately a lot of feedback.
Well, I'll give you a review from a normal person who deployed this.
Did it work?
It was super easy to do.
Perfect.
I really did, and it honestly took a couple of minutes. It was very, very easy to do.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you can build a site from scratch, but what was nice for me using the templates is it kind of gave you placeholders as little reminders of things that you can do. So, of course, people need to understand they have to change the dummy content that's in there, but But because it was so quick to do, it was really nice to have placeholders to say, hey, that's a cool thing to put in there. Let's put the Yammer group there, or let's add those Twitter feeds, or, you know. And even if you scroll up and you look at the top navigation, so if you just hover over. So I looked at some of those and I thought, yeah, that's actually cool ideas. You know, why don't we put emergency numbers in for the, all the different locations and the branches? So I think that was a great idea, kind of like a step-by-step as well, to just remind people of the things that they can do. But of course, you're always going to get people who complain.
Of course.
Why is it blue?
It's not fully working and it starts running and doing things already and manages crises. But I think it was a brilliant template. So kudos to everyone involved. Very easy to deploy. I really didn't have any issues with it. So great on that.
That's really cool to hear, because that's really the intention of the whole lookbook experience. So that basically you can easily get contents, example sites, structures, and of course you are intended to then modify them. But the whole point is that there's a lot of different templates, and this was just a good example of a template which we clearly needed, and to demonstrate the content, in which is timely and understandable. Now, in this case, Katie Swanson, the whole system went in a way that Mark did this one, then we got access on the, or we had a look on the site. Katie Swanson, who's our designer in the design team, responsible of the experiences, then she basically created the content, example content and structures, which is slightly updated from Mark's structure, and then we created that as a template. So you can expect multiple similar ones coming in the future as well, but it's pretty, pretty cool. The only kind of a downside right now is that the tool, the provisioning requires a massive amount of permissions. So it is something which people always freak out, but it's an API level thingy. Now on the, let's say, topic of crisis communication, and there was also the Power Platform template, which came out, I think, week before or a few days before. Well, not actually, that's Wednesday.
March 4.
Anyway, a few days before that, and basic idea is exactly the same. So Microsoft gives you an example content and a structure and application, which you can deploy, step-by-step guidance on the videos, and then you can modify that based on your own needs as well. So really, really nice set of samples. Have you tested this one, either one of you?
I haven't.
Okay. I looked at it in the last 2 days, and I decided to do it as part of my Power Platform
blog post
challenge.
It makes perfect sense. We'll come back on that one in a second as well. Now, one thing what we wanted to call out is the MVP Summit, which actually starts today, in 10 minutes. Actually, good point.
Yes.
There's the welcome.
40 minutes.
Yes.
Well, officially, in 40 minutes. But basically, we're going to do this virtually this time, because there is no travel due to understandable reasons in the world right now, which is a good thing, and really call out the amount of work people are doing behind the scenes. So there's a massive amount of reorganizing all of the sessions and everything else. I'm a co-lead with Jeremy Thake on the Office Dev track, but Office Dev track is this small. So the large tracks are massive, and then trying to shuffle them, make sure that people can actually talk at the same time. They don't overlap, topics don't overlap. We have the speakers, everybody lined up, everybody knows what they're doing. It's a massive, massive job. So it's been really busy 2 weeks. So,
but it's cool. It's cool that, given the fact that we cannot travel, that last minute, because this change is recent, right?
Yeah.
Like that you basically like put everything like on all hands on deck, and you and the whole team made this available possible. So,
well, I had really this really small there's the MVP organization. It's just brilliant.
Every little bit helps. So,
really, and
cool.
As an example, it still says hotel info, which is just an example.
It's so comfortable. Cute.
Yeah. It's now home info.
Home info. Good. And this one was also good. Came out last week as well. How to quickly optimize Office 365 traffic for remote staff and reduce the load of your infrastructure. I think this is super important for people to consider as well, related on the network and on-premises network handling and recommendations related on that. I think Tracy, you said it really well, that obviously whatever is happening right now is shouldn't happen, but we are where we are. But thank God we are in this cloud our time frame already, because we can continue working, we can continue being productive, we are informed in a matter of minutes, so on situations. So anyway, good guidance on there as well. Now let's come back on Tracy. So this is your Power Platform challenge. So we are now, you're halfway through, right?
I'm on, today is the 16th, so today I'm writing the 16th one. So yeah, that's today is pretty much the in the middle, half day away.
Okay, yeah. And there's a lot of like, what would be your favorites? Anything you want to call out on the Power Platform blog posts, the recent ones?
No, I don't pick favorites. Normal people never do that, so it's just not something that we do.
Well, that's going to follow me now for ages.
That would just stick. It's not going away.
I think, no, it's not. That is never, ever going to work. I mean, I've officially renamed my two office toys because this is not normal and this is normal. Okay? That's how that's going to work.
So, and there will always be a fight, epic fight.
I do think what is good for me and the type of feedback that I get, because years ago when I started blogging, I always felt stupid writing things that I thought everyone knew. Yeah. Because that's the biggest mistake we make, is that most people still have to learn what we've already forgotten. Okay, yeah. So I'm really spending a lot of time by covering very, very raw basics that we tend to assume that everyone knows. And yeah. I'm getting a lot of good feedback on it. You know, I'm not just covering like very, very technical or complex things. I'm really taking it from basics. What are connectors? What are triggers? Absolutely, as if someone opens up Power Automate for the first time or whatever it is.
And quite often, actually, that basic documentation, even in the Microsoft documentation, is written by technical people. So they have mm-hmm. their existing assumptions. So having somebody yeah. who's more business-oriented way of thinking, explaining things.
We're going to remember that on the 16th of March at 4 p.m. South African time, this thing happened.
Yes, it went totally south.
Good. But yeah, so as an example, even the PMP YouTube channel, the Microsoft 365 PMP YouTube channel, the community channel, all of the videos where we concentrate on getting started stuff are getting more views always. And then at the same time, a lot of the MVPs are like, yeah, but I don't have anything new and cool and super technical to show. But it's like, no, that's not what we're looking for. We're looking yeah. for repeats of the getting started, because maturity of the people are not at the same level as you are.
Yeah. But it's also, because remember, everyone becomes technical. It's just about that first couple of steps you got to make until where it starts kicking in and you go, wait a minute, now I get it. Yep. But we don't always have the words to use to help people with that. So I know technically it might not be the right word, but juxtaposing is something I'm fond of, where people can illustrate something very complex in a different way for people to yep. understand. And that's storytelling is something I do a lot of my blogs, where I would explain the connectors in Power Automate as little translators that runs between factories and divisions and speaks English and French and Afrikaans and can help yep. everyone, you know, because it kind of has this little light that goes on for business users. It goes, wait a minute, now I get it, you know, because it's about bridging that little gap. But once they kind of get started with it, then it gets easier.
Yep. Yeah. And I like the style and format is really good as well, because that is a really good one as an example. Always remember that failing is the necessary step to succeed. So you understand how not to succeed. So it's really, really, the language and the format is really nice. Now, few more blog posts and we'll get back on the video stream after that. So this one is a jump to folder SPFX extension from
Joel.
Sorry,
in the what? URL, in the URL.
In the URL, Joel. Yes, Joel, yes, Joel Rodriguez. Sorry, Joel. So I'm having all of this blackouts.
What am I doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Who are you,
am I a normal person or not? Now, but yeah, so basic idea is have an extension which helps you to deep dive on the folder structure. So pretty cool extension, uses the right panel to extension and then shows how to make things happen. Available in the GitHub, uses the PMP reusable controls as well. So have a free unlooking that one. And this one is super cool from Xuao.
Xuao,
thank you.
You're welcome.
from Shroud. This is really repeating theme as well. But this is really, 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 really cool, because basic idea is that you have what the Teams, which is associated to this SharePoint site, when there are new messages in the Teams, you actually see them in the SharePoint site as well. So you get a notification how many messages are unread, and then you can open it up and actually read that.
Sweet.
That's insanely cool. This should be out of the box in the product, but it isn't. So here's a sample from Shroud on demonstrating that. See? I said it right.
Yes, perfect. Right. Of course you can.
I'm improving. As long as you're improving, it's positive.
Yes.
And note. So stop using client ID and secret to access your Office 365 services. Basically, just the account ID. It's basically account ID and a password,
yes,
which people then use to store in the web config and all of that. And that's not necessarily a good thing. So certification-based authentication and those are much better. But yeah, that's a good article from Rick on that one. Then this one was from Sergey, related on SharePoint Framework and React Hooks. Seems to be a theme. A lot of people have actually been writing on that one as well. People love to write React-based extensions, and then the React Hooks is the new way of doing things. So making the code cleaner and more easily understandable. So pretty cool. And then from Vartman, he actually had this out before last recording, but we missed it for whatever reason. But yeah, using the Office 365 CLI to grant admin consent to specific scopes using Microsoft Identity Platform. So how can you actually use the CLI to grant or to click basically this automatically? So rather than forcing people to do that manually. So
yes,
really cool stuff from Vartaman. And then this one related again on the current situation. So pretty cool web part showing the data based on is the world level data or the country level data based on the data which is available from internet. I'm not sure which is what is the data source because we didn't actually check the code, but it is available as an example. So you can actually use that if you want together with the crisis management sites. So that could be one option to put in here as well. So, but that's it for the articles. I think stop that one and let's do a few minutes just summary on this week. So this week, obviously MVP Summit is one of the things which hopefully all of the MVPs are participating on. What are the things what you're waiting for most, even though the summit
NDA.
NDA. Clever. Any specific presenters, any specific people? So
you, I never get enough you talking, so I'm looking forward to
yes.
Oh,
actually,
it's gonna be interesting.
Will be talking in my session as well, so
yeah. No, I think it's gonna be interesting how the whole experience will look like. It will be the first time for me to attend a live meeting on Teams to basically see like a big, because there are two types of meetings, right? So there's one where there's bigger group and these are the 250 folks plus.
Yeah.
And then also combined with that, like how will the meeting slots, like regular team calls, accommodate our group that suddenly is bigger because now everybody can attend? Yeah. Like, will that be a problem or not? Or will it just work fine in the end?
I definitely think we are going to have snags, and I just hope that everyone can just be human and have empathy and just appreciate.
Be normal, basically.
Like us good folks, yeah. So, because, I mean, it's a learning curve for all of us, but I'm also very excited to see how this can happen and the lessons we can learn from it, because we're all going to walk away after this week going, yeah, that worked and that didn't work.
Yep.
Because as much as we work from home or not, making it a lifestyle is a different thing. And there's a lot of lessons learned in just the MVP Summit going virtual that we can share with clients again. Because I can promise you, conferences and future has changed forever. We know this, regardless of what happens over the next couple of weeks. So I'm excited for that. Something I'm sad for, traveling from South Africa, I've always said that it's one of the nicest things for me being part of the MVP program is that bond I suddenly have with Microsoft and with people across the world, which I didn't have before. You know, you kind of like we're so far from each other. So I just traveled every year there. I don't care where I got the money and how I made it work, but I just made a point of going every year, and it's just such an amazing experience. So I know that we're a bunch of crazies and we'll make it work, and we're going to find other ways of filling that social bits, because that was always the most important for all of us, is the chats we had in between. And that's something that we're going to have to work on and see how does that become something new, because it's got to evolve into something, you know. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's going to be interesting.
And no dinners or evening bar trips either. So all of that is now.
Listen, I'm going to save a lot of money in Starbucks, because let me tell you what. Buying one Starbucks coffee in the US costs me like a week's groceries in South Africa. Okay, so that's expensive for some of us.
There are some upsides to it.
I'm really looking forward to that. I can buy a bottle of Prosecco in South Africa for the price you pay for a cappuccino in the US, man. So I'm not looking forward to that.
And you can actually now participate. You can participate on a conference and drinking that Prosecco at the same time.
It's absolutely happening, people. This is me.
5 p.m. somewhere. It's 5 p.m. somewhere.
Yes.
I will be having wine while listening to Jeff Tepper in 30 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is true.
No, and I think like to add one more thing. I think the thing that I love about this change, the fact that Summit, despite all of the things that are basically against us, is there. It's going to happen. It's virtual event, because it's more inclusive. Like originally, my plan was not to go, not to attend. I wouldn't go. Now I can attend, and I guess that there is the case for many people across the world, whether they cannot travel for health reasons, personal reasons, political reasons,
financial.
Exactly. Yeah. Now right. they can attend. Now they can be truly a part of the MVP group without being excluded from this beautiful event, right? Yep. So I think that even if eventually next year we will have the ability to go there in person, I'd love to see that virtual bit stay, because there's always someone who cannot come, and I think that it isn't fair to exclude them.
Yep,
I fully agree. I do agree with that. I think it's a good idea. I mean, I've two or three times I've presented at conferences because I had a last minute visa problem or something went wrong with my trips, where I presented at conferences and I had great outcomes. And I know for attendees, it's amazing to be able to speak to speakers. I understand that. But if we approach this right, and if we adapt our technology to kind of like make it more dynamic or intuitive or interactive, then we can make this work. We can make anything work.
Absolutely. And all of the input and feedback we are now gathering for MVP Summit is then going to be visible in the teams and the channels and tools and all of that definitely later on, because obviously it's our teams organization who's now coordinating and running the show. Caruana doing an awesome job behind of the scenes, and a lot of other people as well. So, but we'll see. We'll talk more about that one within the next BNP Weekly within a week.
Evaluating the summit.
Yeah, exactly. But thank you, Tracy, for joining us on this week. Really great discussion, and on important topics as well. So, and it is a pity that we won't be in the same room drinking wine, but hey, we're not
you
good,
can drink so. Wine in your own room.
You know, us normal people will just have wine on our own. You know?
But I think that's it.
Thanks for including me. It's been a lot of fun. You guys are quite funny for techies, I must admit.
Thank you. Not normal people.
What a sense of humor for non-normal people.
Non-normal people.
It's going to stick. It's going to stick.
But I think that's it for now. So we'll be back in a week with the following BNP Weekly. So thank you for watching or listening, depending on which format you actually chosen to use. And thank you, Tracy, one more time. And thank you, Waldeck. And we'll be back.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.